Here's the 30-second lesson on what legends know. Never practice nunchucks in a crowded room. Never eat chole before a road trip. Always take your shirt off before you iron it. Don't take a call near a swimming pool. And don't forget, saving is not investing. Legends don't just save, they invest in mutual funds. Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.
Tatka Clutter today stays with politics, but with a difference. Not Indian politics, not politics in the neighborhood, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nepal, Sri Lanka, no. We are taking you to Europe. But normally, we don't pay European politics so much attention. America, yes. Some countries in Africa also. Some countries in Europe. The Ukraine-Russia war, for example, that's been a source of news and curiosity. Britain, but Europe as such. When you say Europe, you mean European Union, 27 countries. Now, the reason we are going there and we are taking you there is because a phenomenon has been rising in Europe. And that is the rise of the hard right in Europe. Generally, if you ask people on the street, in a college, at a university, what do you think of Europe? What is Europe's politics like? People would generally say, chances are the default answer would be liberal, socialist, welfareist, stuff like that. That's why it's interesting and important that in Europe, it isn't just the right that is rising, but also the far right that is rising. So rise of the right, we have seen in many countries now, the right has taken over, including in Scandinavian countries, which were seen as the home of the most successful socialism or the poster boys of socialism. The political right, or today I can say the moderate right or center right, has risen there. So there is a rise of the right across Europe. There are a couple of outliers or those who have bucked the trend, but generally there is a rise of the right across Europe. But the important thing now is the rise of the hard right. The latest example there is Portugal. Portugal has had an election. That election has led to a change in government, although nobody's got a majority. One reason nobody's got a majority also is that a third party has arisen. Now, usually, if you see politics in Europe, it will be like a two-party system or a two-coalition system, one a bit to the left, one a bit to the right, but not that far from the center. So both parties or both combinations have generally been following conventional rules of the game, conventional approach to governance, continuing on with the foreign policies of the previous government, of the predecessor, and so on. But now these disruptive new parties are coming in. What has happened in Portugal? Portugal is a country in which we should be interested. After all, a part of our country was colonized by the Portuguese, Goa namely, and India had to fight a war, a short war, but a war involving Army, Navy, Air Force to liberate Goa. With Portugal, Goa still retains very deep cultural, religious, linguistic, ethnic contacts and relations. Portugal's outgoing Prime Minister, who resigned in 2023 towards the end of 2023, in the midst of a controversy because his chief staff officer was raided and investigated for bribery, and some 75,000 euros in cash were found in his bookshelves, literally between books. So to offer himself for investigation, Antonio Costa, who has a bit of an Indian connection, his father was half Indian. His father, Orlando, a well-known author, was born in Maputo in Mozambique. One set of his parents was Indian origin, and that's the reason Antonio Costa is considered to be half Indian. Our Prime Minister Modi has hailed him as such. Also, in Portugal, he was popular. He was a socialist. He was popular as Babush. Babush is the Konkani expression for a loved one, like a bachu, papu, like a bit like that, Babush. So that's how he was known. He, however, had to resign under the shadow of this scandal, which, by the way, never found anything against him. So he's innocent. His staff officer, yes, nothing against him. But he lost power like that, and his party now has lost power. So the Socialist Party, which had won a majority the last time, there was an election in Portugal, because in 2021 they had failed to pass a budget. The coalition partners had failed to pass a budget, after which the president ordered a fresh election in which the socialists got a majority. And now, because midway through that term, the socialist prime minister, despite his majority, resigned under the shadow of this scandal, they were not able to set up a plausible government after that, and a fresh election was held. Now, normally you would have thought, if a fresh election means there is a center-right party and there is a left-of-center party. Left-of-center party is the socialists. The interesting thing in Portugal is, and this is a bit of a confusing thing, even the right-of-center party is called Social Democratic Party, or SDP. So the chances were that either SDP, which is the center-right party, they will get the votes, or socialists will get the votes. The size of the house in Portugal is 230, right? So 116 is majority. Of the 230, 226 are directly elected from their constituencies, as we would put them in India, or their districts. Four are then elected by Portuguese living across the world. So those four seats are for them. So 116. But what has happened in this election? Social Democratic Party, the party of the center right, don't be confused by the name. Social Democratic Party, party of the center right, has won 79 seats. That makes it 37 short of a majority. Socialists have won 77 seats. There is a difference of only 2 seats, but there is no Operation Kamal, or no operation this or that, no defections. The president is invited. The president's name is Marcelo Rebelo da Sousa. Again, Portugal has a system where the president is directly elected. It's a divided power situation, a bit like France, not exactly, but a bit like France. So the president is directly elected. President and prime minister can be from different parties. The president in this case is from the Conservative Party, from the Social Democratic Party, or the center-right Conservative Party. Once again, I keep on repeating this, that Social Democratic Party is very confusing. It is not a left party. It is the anti-left party. The president is from that party. Following the convention, he's invited the leader of the largest group being SDP, Social Democratic Party, the center-right party, its leader, Luis Montenegro, to be sworn as prime minister. He's now become prime minister of a minority government. Now, why has this happened? In a house of 230, mainly with two parties, and each party has a little alliance of its own also, a left-right alliance. Even those alliances have not come anywhere near a majority. How come that happened in a country like Portugal, where the split was always two-way? If one party did not win a majority, one alliance won a majority, or at least came close to a majority. That hasn't happened because a third power has risen in Portugal. And that third power is the power of the hard right. That third power is a party which is not called left or right. Imagine what it's called. It's called Chega. And can you guess what this Chega means? Chega means enough. So this is, as you can guess from the name, it's a party that rejects everything, that questions everybody. This is a party of sab mile hue hain mindset. Remember, that's how the Anna movement started, and that's how Arvind Kejriwal and others said that everybody is complicit in politics. They are all in it together. So that is how this party has risen, Chega, or enough. Who heads this party? This party is headed by a 41-year-old man called Andres Ventura. Now, Andres Ventura is a very interesting man, a young man, a very interesting man. He's already contested for president once and lost. He is a lawyer, a tax expert, a TV anchor, a sports expert also. So a little bit of a Dugal Saab phenomenon, as we might say from our popular culture, but very popular in a certain demographic, because he is reflecting many concerns of the times. For example, rising crime, rising immigration, crimes against women, the conservative backlash on LGBTQ. Remember, Portugal is a deeply Catholic country, although like most Christian countries in Europe, people are becoming irreligious or people don't lean on religion very much. And that's where there is a backlash. If you look at Andre Ventura's policies, he believes in now life sentences for criminals, which in liberal European countries is not done. Usually life sentences, chemical castration for rapists, anti-immigration policies, control over LGBTQ. He, for example, would let LGBTQ partners live together but not getting married. And also, he goes for Catholic conservatism, and that one slogan of every populist from Bolsonaro to Orban to even Xi Jinping to Javier Milei in Argentina. That is a war on corruption. So these are the slogans he has, but because he's a man of such hard right, he in the past has made statements which have called the blacks. Now Portugal, for example, is a sizable black and Asian population. There are many Indian immigrants also there. Indian immigrants means naturalized Indians, particularly from Goa, former colony in Portugal. But similarly, there are lots of black people who become Portuguese from Portuguese colonies in Africa. In fact, if you look at the Portuguese football team, you can see how diverse that country has become through immigration. Now, those black people are the ones that Ventura once referred to as bandits. For that, he was tried and convicted by a court for using unacceptable, hateful language. Now, he's won 48 seats, and he's the reason nobody has a majority and nobody can get a majority. So at this point, no alliance also gets a majority. Now, alliances are also very interesting in Portugal. For example, the alliance of the left parties also includes a green party called People, Animals, Nature, right? So all of them together cannot get majority on one side because he's got 48. Standout line after the election results was, I quote, "This is the night that the two-party system in Portugal is over." What that means is that anybody who forms a government now needs his support. So he's offered, he's willing to support the right of center party, the right of center party, which has got 79 seats and whose leader, Montenegro, has now been sworn prime minister. But his policies are such that Montenegro and his party are saying they will not have a coalition with him. Montenegro, in fact, has said that there is no question of a coalition with him. The line he used when he was called in to be sworn in was, "No is no." So what happens in Portugal then is that Portugal will now have a minority government. And remember, how did this crisis start? This crisis started in 2021 when the government of that era, the coalition government of that time, was not able to pass this budget. This government now has to pass the budget for 2025. And once again, this crisis will continue where this new party will now call the shots. So that is a big change in Portugal. What happens with this is that Portugal is not an exception, and that's the reason we are talking about it. Portugal is not an exception. The right has been rising. In fact, the far right parties have been rising in many countries across Europe. There's Hungary, Croatia. Hungary, in fact, they rule the country. The Fidesz party, that is Viktor Orban's party, rules the countries. Hungary, Croatia, Finland, Poland. Poland, they did not quite win power this time, but they are very powerful there. Greece, Sweden, France. If you see Europe, for example, now, in at least five countries of Europe, which include four of the biggest countries in Europe, which is France, Italy, Germany, Poland, in all of these countries, the hard right has at least 20% of the vote. That's a very significant change in Europe. In most of these countries, these parties used to have almost nothing. See, for example, how Ventura's Chega has risen in Portugal. In 2019, they had 1% of the vote and only one seat. They laughed out. 2022, they got 7%. 1% became 7% and they got 12 seats. Now, from 12, they've gone to 48 seats and their vote percentage has gone to 18%. 18%, so still not cutting the 20% ballpark, but because the rest of the vote is divided as a third party, 18% vote also gets them 48 seats. But if you look at the rest of Europe now, you see the hard right rising, and that becomes very important at a time when European elections that are going to take place just in June. So between 6th and 9th of June, European elections will take place. 40 crore voters in Europe, in the 27 EU member countries of Europe, will vote for the European Parliament or members of European Parliaments or MEPs. That is a 720 seat house. And now all projections are telling us that the number of seats held by the hard right will go up from about 20% to 25%. And who are these parties that are going to gain? So there is one group called Identity and Democracy. That includes German AfD, the right-wing German party, which has more than 20% vote. Then the French far-right party, RN, or National Rally Party. Further, it has ECR, European Conservatives and Reformists. These have 67 right-wing parties from across Europe. So the first group, that is the Identity and Democracy Party, that is now projected to win 98 seats, up from last time substantially. The second one, 18 seats, again up substantially from last time, and I'll give you some data as we go along. So if you add these two, the Identity and Democracy group and then the ECR, European Conservatives and Reformist group, with a third group, that is Viktor Orban's Fidesz, that is A plus B plus C, this adds up to about 25% of the seats. And see also how these combinations are formed. The first combination, Identity and Democracy, that has German AfD and French far-right party, National Rally or RN, I told you. ECR includes, it has 67 right-wing parties, but it also includes Poland's Law and Justice Party, or PIS as it's called. It used to be in power earlier. Brothers of Italy Party, which is right now in the ruling coalition. And I told you the third group is Viktor Orban's Fidesz Party. Now, conventional parties in EU, also in MEP, they followed a principle of cordon sanitaire around them. So cordon sanitaire means that I will talk to these people, but then there are parties who follow a certain ideology or a certain way. I will not even talk to them. I will not relate to them. I will not do coalitions with them. These hard right parties pass that definition. So the leading party in European Parliament is EPP, or European People's Party. It's the largest, the oldest party, centre-right, just a little bit to the right of centre, very mainstream party. It has been fighting the left plus Greens all this while. Now it's been increasingly fighting the far right as well. So what is centre-right has actually become middle of the road and centrist in this equation in European politics. However, the parties which have the momentum, or parties which are rising, are the far-right parties. Now EPP chief Manfred Weber was quoted in Politico as saying that he will have no time, his party will have no time for those who are anti-European or of the radical right. And he said that he has three principles. My three principles are: one, parties we deal with have to be, number one, pro-Europe, number two, pro-Ukraine, and number three, pro-rule of law. Now, it is one thing to say that, but the fact is that his party and his allies have been losing votes election after election. And their allies are also losing votes in their respective countries where they come from. And where are those votes going? Those votes are going rapidly to the far-right parties. European Council for Foreign Relations has done a projection of results. That result shows that still EPP and its ally SND, which is Socialists and Democrats, they will perhaps continue to have a majority for now, but in the long term they are facing a decline. But they will continue to decline. In fact, there are some numbers given which I am not sharing with you because it's too much detail. Just that the decline is a well-established projection. Similarly, the main gainers in the process will be hard right. And hard right means both coalitions of hard right will gain. And that is the direction Europe is headed to. That is what Putin's looking at very closely, because he thinks as the nationalist right rises in Europe, these parties will be less committed to the joint European causes, which means these parties might also be less committed to the defense of Ukraine and to a joint fight against Putin or Putin's Russia. That is what he's counting on. Having said that, I can only underline to you that Giorgia Meloni came to power in Italy on very much a similar rhetoric. In fact, much more colorful right-wing rhetoric than we've seen that from many of the other leaders, comparable in some ways to Geert Wilders, who's got won a bunch of seats in the Netherlands that we spoke about in a Cut the Clutter episode. Just the other day, I will share a link with you because the Netherlands has also voted right in some ways, but also has given a lot of seats to the hard right, following the same trend and phenomenon. But she also, since she has come to power, has not come up to, if I may use that expression, has not come up to Vladimir Putin's expectations. She's been very European and she's moved much closer to mainstream politics and mainstream strategic worldview. And that might be the case with other hard right leaders as well. At the same time, we don't know if that's going to happen, and new uncertainties have now arisen in Europe and they are growing, not declining.